Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And let me just explain for a minute why we have our guest David Arquette here today. Well, first, because he's a really talented and interesting guy.
Because we like you.
But a month or so ago, I attended a wonderful event honoring Buster Keaton and laying a kind of a plaque in the sidewalk where his original studio stood, south of Santa Monica Boulevard here in L.A. And it was a nice ceremony, and
a
number of speeches were made, and I saw David there, and I thought, well, that's cool that he's here. He must be a Buster Keaton fan. He looks like a smart guy who would be that. But then when he got up to the platform, he did a pantomime, kind of a slapstick pantomime, and brought the house down, if that's what you say about a group of people who are out on a sidewalk. But you did. And that's you disarmed so nice. Everybody and just won over the crowd like in an incredible way.
Wow, that's so sweet to hear. Thank you.
Well, it really
Thank
was
you.
Special.
It was a fun time. They asked me to say something, and I hadn't prepared anything. And I'm not good in social settings. I get all nervous. I'm just a jittery, what do I say? I'll always put my foot in my mouth. I'll always do something
it's okay.
embarrassing.
You're accepted here.
But we were at Buster Keaton celebration. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I got the perfect idea. I can just say nothing. Do a silent speech. I may just do that as my go-to now for every speech.
It can only go well.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
All you need is slapstick and some silliness.
Well, you nailed it, and it was a delight to watch.
Oh, it was sweet. My friend Jeff Vespa had invited me to that and was really helpful with the Buster Keaton organization to sort of go there, and his family wrote me a very sweet note. So it was a wonderful day. I was honored
great.
To be a part
That's
of it.
That's great. Yes, it was.
We knew that the Arquettes were meant to be best friends with the Maltins when my mom and I first saw you at Off the Wall.
Oh, yes.
We were getting my...
Well, that is my the spot.
My dad collects stuff in general.
Yes.
But every year for his birthday, we try to find something from the 1939 World's Fair.
Wow.
Because that's his favorite. And Off the Wall, of course.
I may have something.
Uh-oh. Please, we have a lot. We're okay. There's plenty.
I know. The older you get, the smaller the collectibles get. So
exactly.
It's like, you know what?
Exactly. A little one-inch statuette.
Yeah, a perfect. Coin.
Yep. You two can't be together. This is a bad idea. This is not his desk. People look at his desk and they go, where do you put papers down and stuff? And he's like, what do you mean papers on a desk? It's just covered in tchotchkes.
That's what my car's like, a homeless person. No, I don't mean any offense to the homeless, but I'll be with you soon, I'm sure.
As I say, you are accepted here.
Thank you.
That. We saw you at Off the Wall, and I think you were there were puzzles.
We should explain that Off the Wall was a beloved.
It is still here.
Oh, it's still.
But
remember,
it's just
it moved.
Not on Melrose. Now it's at some fancy spot on La Cienega.
That's so what
it's
yeah,
amazing.
I went to their opening. And I was too intimidated. I missed the old creaky step up really high.
I'm telling you, they had to increase the prices a little.
Yeah, right.
Because it's such a
rent went up.
Well, they have
so
the greatest stuff, and I don't mean
they do.
I mean, if you could afford it, it's the spot.
They have. How do we describe it? They have kitsch.
Yeah.
They have memorabilia.
Yeah.
They have major pieces of display and furniture. And other fun stuff.
But they also have little, gifts if you need to get something.
Yeah.
Somebody.
That
is a fun
This app. Episode is sponsored by...
Off the Wall.
Off the Wall.
Just call Dennis. That's tell him Maltins and David Arquette sent you.
See, now that's something I could get behind.
Yeah.
Is if we just... the Maltins and David Arquette.
Yeah.
Because why not?
That's why not.
That's the... And I remember my mother... This is my mother. It's perfect. He's so handsome and he collects things. Isn't that nice? That's exactly what she said. That is my mother.
How do you think you became a collector? Was there something that...
Yeah, I know exactly how. From my father and my grandfather, Cliff.
Ah.
Cliff really left us all these things. You know, he had this bartender. He had
Yes. I
China
have that. I used to have that.
Yeah, he shakes up a martini.
It was a tin toy of Charlie Weaver, which was Cliff Arquette's alter ego.
Yeah. Let's talk about Cliff Arquette for a moment, my friends.
All right.
Cliff Arquette is my grandfather on my father's side. And he was the son of vaudevillian actors out of Toledo, Ohio. They had a little vaudevillian thing. And then he learned the sort of craft there And then went on the road and played piano, had an act of his own. He played part of some touring sort of not like orchestra or something, but a comedic sort of version. And it's really famous, and I always forget the name of it. But then he sort of developed his character, Charlie Weaver, who wrote Letters Home to Mama from Mount Ida.
Mount Ida.
So it was a little snapshot of like all American town.
She goes on.
And she goes on. Yes. Yes. It was, so it's all these stories about the hometown people, like Elise Crack, who's like the sort of a little boozy, floozy kind of lady, and all these different characters, Gomer, and all these people. And so we'd tell these stories about him in his letter home to Mama. And she'd respond, and he'd read them live on the radio at the time. And then the radio television happened, radio kind of died out. And he was sitting at home watching Jack Parr one day. Jack Parr said, "Whatever happened to Charlie Weaver?" And he couldn't believe it. He was semi-retired, and he's sitting there, and he called up Jack Parr after that and said, "I'm here, I'm still."
And where so I am is not on your show. Yeah. Let's talk about it.
And he started going on. He was one of the regular guests on the original Tonight Show, and made several appearances, and sort of brought the character to life that he had created on the radio. So now he was this old man, and he could kind of get away with a little edgy humor, because he was kind of like a little bit of a, you know, dirty old man, but he wasn't like, he wasn't raunchy, just stuff right. Like, you know, I don't know how many, I don't know.
It's what magicians call misdirection, I guess.
Yeah.
He seemed like this sweet old fellow. Yeah. So you were kind of taken by surprise if he said something slightly risky.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd say stuff like, how high should you be when you jump out of an airplane? And he'd say, "I think two bottles will do." That kind of jokes.
These are the ones we keep, though. These are the jokes that my dad will repeat.
Yeah, and then from there, he sort of became a regular on the Hollywood Squares.
And that's where those who don't know, Charlie Weaver was a household name. I mean, he was a very familiar face on television.
I got a tattoo of him right there.
Oh,
there he is. Oh, what a wonderful tattoo.
Yeah,
from Mark that's Mahoney. Great. In his makeup.
Yeah. Oh, Shamrock. See, that's how cool you are.
Mark Mahoney's Shamrock. The coolest in the world. Yeah.
My dad has tons of tattoos. He totally gets it. Totally gets it.
And there was a popular
If you got chin. A tattoo of any film, what would it be?
I always say, because I have tattoos, people ask me if he has tattoos.
Oh, yeah.
I always say, yeah, he has a full Casablanca back piece.
That's nice.
And the best thing is, if you say it with a straight face, people go, "Really?" And I'm like, yes. So in my mind, there are thousands of people around the world who think he has a full Casablanca back piece.
I like that.
In your mind.
Thank you.
Yes. Emphasize in your mind.
What's your tattoo? Come on. What's your movie tattoo?
What's one of them?
Just one of them.
Just a little gimmicky one.
You have to be nice.
Sydney Greenstreet in the Maltese Falcon.
What about just the Maltese Falcon?
That's too easy.
Too good.
Too easy.
See, he's picky.
Gotta go a little bit off the trail there.
Oh, good.
Just a bit. See, not wildly off the trail,
I really want that to happen.
But anyway, there was this wonderful tin toy, a wind-up tin toy of Charlie Weaver as a bartender.
Yeah.
And his arm moved, and it looked like he was actually pouring a drink.
Yeah, it has a shake. He had a shaker. He'd pour himself a drink. He'd drink it. His nose would turn red and smoke would come out of his ears. And he had that built and mass produced. And it's still on eBay if you're looking for it.
I am like, just hang on a second. I'm going to be over here.
No, that's Charlie EY, just if you're checking. Yeah. Charlie.
Right. If you're on eBay
now. And I named my son Charlie IE.
How could you?
I know.
How could you?
But I'm kind of happy with the IE.
Nah, yeah. It's fine. It's fine.
Easier to find stuff with his name on it.
The homage still stands.
Yeah, good.
I love that. So did you get to know him?
I didn't know him very well. No. He passed away when I was about 4 or 5.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he lived here, and we lived at the time in like Chicago and Virginia. So never really got to know him.
At least you know a lot about him.
I have done research. He was a fascinating man. He invented stuff. He was one of the first people to use latex as a sort of masking.
Prosthetic,
yeah. The breathable kind, although we never sort of had the patent and followed up on it. So It's one of those stories.
C'est la vie.
C'est la vie.
Go on a Shark Tank and try to get it back.
Oh. And who's the one? Myrna Loy? That's is she the one? No, wait. Who's the one who invented like a...
Hedy
Lamarr. I mean, that is the best story.
Yes.
I love that.
In fact, that every time we use a cell phone, we should say, thank you, Miss Lamarr.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Thank you, Miss Lamarr.
That's the tattoo. Just thank you, Miss Lamarr.
By the way, that is a good one.
Thank you. Watch, he's going to go back. I want a commission if you go get that as a tattoo. Okay. Or we have to get a matching. This is fun for me. This is good. This is good. We'll get matching tattoo. My dad's just like, no. No, we're not going to.
I wonder if you could find her writing saying, thank you.
Only one way to find out.
So, then your parents were also performing.
Yeah, they sure were. My father was an actor for 45 years plus. Just everything from the Waltons to... Johnny Got His Gun was one of his first films, which was a really great sort of a book and then film, but it's my dad at a very young age. And, he tried out for the Actors Studio forever, never got in, which I still resent them for. But he did a lot of stuff. He was, a commercial working actor, so when there were strikes, it was rough at the house, that kind of like thing. But he was a great, wonderful guy. And they also love puppets. I have a puppet obsession
because
of them. And costumes. My grandfather left us a costume kit and like a makeup box. So all that stuff sort of led to my collecting habits.
Understandably so. Yeah. Now, there's no way to ask this that doesn't sound dumb, but you're one of five siblings, and you all wound up in showbiz.
Yes.
Or not wound up. I guess you followed your path into showbiz. Was it clear that that's where you were all headed? Was it inevitable?
Well, we always did like plays and stuff and always grew up with playing sort of theater games. And my dad was really great improviser. He was in Waiting for Guffman and he trained with Paul Sills and Viola Spolin.
Oh, they're like the patron saints of improv.
I luckily got to study with Paul Sills too. And it was incredible. I mean, it was just learning sort of that nature way back when it was sort of not in its infancy, but when it still was like it's still a developing craft. So it was fun to sort of get those early lessons. I still use it to this day in acting when I'm trying to find something out of the scene or out of the character or out of the relationship that's sort of some hopefully whimsical if it calls for it or even emotional, you can improvise on dark stuff too.
I think whimsical is a really good way to describe you. That to me is 100%. And it's funny you're talking about the costumes because obviously one of the things you're known for is your fantastic fashion sense.
Thank you.
And I love seeing what you put on and I love that it's fun and interesting.
I've sort of toned it down quite a bit. At different times, I go through these periods where like, I'm going to dress like a dad. But it's always a costume. But I've recently gotten to wrestling, professional wrestling. And so that has enabled me to really tap into my eccentric, bedazzled self. And you can really like, at one point I was wrestling and I had these like wrestling tights I ordered off eBay that are orange and black striped. And I'm sitting there and I'm all sweaty after working out. And I'm like, that's why I did this. So I could dress how I would feel like I should be dressing all the time. It's like Comic-Con. Whenever you go to Comic-Con and there's like a stormtrooper making you a cappuccino, I was like, why can't this just be life? Like, why do you have to? I'm sure you could talk to your friend back in Spokane, your boss, and say like, I'd really appreciate it if you let me dress up as a stormtrooper. Everyone should. Unicorns, rainbows.
I get it.
You get it.
Our first Comic-Con, we walked in and my mom goes, Jesse, I never knew you were normal. I was like, thank you, Mom.
Finally,
see,
yes.
All I had to do is take you to Comic-Con and have you go, what in the actual?
It's liberating for a lot of people.
It is. Yeah. It really is. It's really beautiful. I mean, that's what makes this whole business. I mean, you're not only such a genius about, your study of film and relating it to people and drawing people in, telling them the stories, following your advice and just of your books. And so it's great to have, you're like a mega fan. You're not only a fan, you're a historian. So, I mean, when you meet people that really love film or they love wrestling or they love whatever, puppets. It's great. It just makes sort of, I don't know, those are all the nicest people anyway. They're just, you just kind of get along and you seldom run into really jerks, but there's always jerks everywhere.
Yeah. But
it's sorry, I brought it down.
No. True.
But there's something, I think the one quality that travels through all the things you've just, kind of people you just described, is youthfulness.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think that's part of why they're likable people and nice people. It's because they're like big kids.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You also do what you love. I think that's a huge, my mom and I always bring it up, my mom a lot today. Hi, Mom. My mom and I always joke that my dad's walking music is the Laurel and Hardy, because he just always looks like a little kid. And you do. You're adorable. But
my wife says I'm Eeyore, so.
Aww.
Oh. I get down and why me?
That's even cuter, though.
No, it's not.
You're like, not for me.
No. Clinically depressive way. Oh. No, I'm just kidding.
We'll pin your tail back on. You'll
take
be fine.
Medicine, yes.
You'll be, hey, that's what we like. Medicated is good.
A little bit of the right medication.
Medicated.
They have all these things now where you could like swab your mouth and they could tell you directly like what kind of chemicals would work best for you. So it's getting to be a little bit more of a science. I never liked a lot of this stuff. A lot of the time it's like, try something. But I found something that's good. And good. Now I'm doing a commercial for them.
That's right. And by the way, we're selling
funny,
a lot
I just,
today.
I just
life, love. The greatest new pill you could ever take.
I love it.
Side effects include death.
Right, oh God.
Yeah, I know.
If you experience bleeding
death
from the
diarrhea.
Eyes for more than 5 hours, then please call. No, what I was going to say is people who are
they say,
weird on
be
the
sure
outside.
To tell your doctor.
I know, yes. Yeah. Be sure to tell your doctor if you experience an erection over 4 hours. I feel like there would be a lot of problems going on there, guys.
I'm calling my doctor all the time.
Right.
I'm like,
help.
What's going on?
Help.
He's like, what did you take? I'm like, nothing.
Oh, God.
He said, oh, you just have.
Now,
we could give you
special.
Something for that.
Now, where are you in the pecking order of our cats?
I'm the youngest.
Okay.
So I got it easiest.
I like that.
I was the most pecked or the least pecked, depending on how you look at it.
You were the finale.
I was.
You were the finale.
It's like in show business, you know, the next to last act.
Yeah.
And then the last act, you know, on the bill and vaudeville, you know, so you have to come out and
really
do it.
Kill
prove
it.
Yourself. Yeah, yeah, really kill it.
Get out there and sing, kid.
Smile, Louise. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but you kind of, I mean, you're very active today doing a lot of different things from the wrestling to, you know, music and innumerable other outlets.
Music. That was Ear 2000 in the year 2000.
Ah.
Yeah, that was my band's name, Ear 2000. Uh-huh. Look them up. It was awesome.
Was it actually Ear 2000?
It was 1999 we started. Pretty much died in the year 2000, but it was Ear 2000.
How did you deal with Y2K?
Well, after
the band
it
ended.
Didn't all blow up, yeah, we were like, okay, we did our job
this
here, guys.
This is unfortunate. Okay, now what?
But you were you're kind of like the poster boy for the 90s.
Wow, thank
you. I mean, but really, I mean, the films you were in.
Yeah, the 90s.
That touched a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that a lot of people still embrace to this day.
I know, it's interesting.
You know, and television as well, and other things and other media. But Jesse is one of those people.
You are right.
I know, it's really beautiful that, you know, you do these things and then people see them when they're much younger and now they've grown up and it had a significant effect in their life. Like they're doing a reunion in Santa Rosa where we filmed the Scream, the original Scream. And at the house, some of the fans have rented it out, the final scene where the thing happens. So they're having a big party
the
anniversary. So that's going to be a big fun
thing.
Well, see, I do want to go back 1 second. People who look weird on the outside are the nicest on the inside because they don't have to pretend to be anything they're not.
Yes.
That is all.
Yes.
Anyway, but no, it's a crazy thing to look through your filmography because now I have some friends who know you for wrestling.
Yeah.
I have some friends where they went, oh my God, David Arquette, you have to ask him about wrestling. That's so cool. And then I've got other friends who had my reaction, which is it's first never been kissed. because again, I am yes. prime Drew Barrymore.
Yes, that was the wheelhouse.
And that movie holds up in every way.
It does.
I love that movie so much.
And a lot of great
so
people
much.
Came out of it too.
Well, mm-hmm. Molly Shannon, John C. Reilly, Lily Sobieski, Marley Shelton. The list is ridiculous.
Yeah,
and then tons of cameos, which one of my favorite things with 90s films like that, whether it's She's All That or any of those, is to look in the background and see everyone who's working today.
Yeah.
It's always funny.
I know. That's always an interesting game.
Of course it was.
It's also interesting, like just careers in general. You just have to kind of stay with it. It's a rough business. And
it is.
You get shot down. I literally got my first job after auditioning for like 8 years, I think.
Mm.
And it was like, just because I've gotten close on stuff, but I'm just not a good auditioner.
Mm.
So I'll go in and I'll like, be so nervous, and I get like their energy. So I started recording myself on tape and sending it out, and I got a really fun film recently. I've done a few little interesting things coming up.
But see, it's smart to know yourself, and it's smart to basically give yourself the best opportunity that you can.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Because auditioning is an art form in and of itself, and I'm always amazed.
I wouldn't call it an art form.
I think it's a
skill. It's a skill.
It's something.
Can be art if
anything can be
they're
art.
Good at it.
But, you know, but listening to stuff of like, now pretend to throw up, now pretend to fall
down.
That
would
be
easy.
Yeah, right.
Me to do that in an audition. I'm like, what? Do I get it?
Feel concerned and neurotic. Done.
Yes.
Done. I've got it.
Wet yourself.
But that's
I would do it.
But that's the kind of thing is I all actors, to me, you have to really love it to deal with all of that.
Yeah.
Getting to the set is the hardest part of that aspect. And then once you're there, then you get to act.
Yeah.
Then you get to do the thing that you like to do. But all the rest of it is tough.
It is.
And I'm always impressed. I've always been growing up here and having so many friends who were actors and taking them to auditions. I would just sit there and think, God, I could never do this.
Yeah.
I could never sit in a room
and
do that. It's very brave, I think. It's very brave.
Why, thank you.
No, it is, though. Yeah,
It is.
It's dangerous
work, and there are times when
tires
go on.
Just take the compliment.
Thank you. I will.
Take the compliment.
So what was your first? What was the first thing where you went, holy shit, I've got it?
I did a show called The Outsiders, which was on Fox when it first started, that Francis Ford Coppola produced.
From the book?
Yeah, the book. Issey Hinton was involved, of course, and
it
was great. Yeah, it was a really great opportunity, and it lasted like a year. So it was an hour long show, single camera. So I got a real sort of education in. Oh wow, this is how a camera works. This is how you stand. This is how you start feeling emotions at the right time. These are your lines that you have to memorize. So that was really good. And then the second thing I did was Parenthood, which was another TV show after a movie.
Hmm.
And that was also a really wonderful experience.
I love that show.
And that was a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that also gave me another year of sort of skill. So after that, I felt like I had gotten it a little and done some sitcom stuff. And so that was the start. And then movies, I don't know. One of my first movies was Where the Day Takes You.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of my first, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes, that movie.
I'm telling you, there's your demo sitting right there.
Exactly.
I love that film.
Yeah,
of course
it was
I do.
A sweet
I film. Have to.
Also, a bunch of people in that.
Amazing.
Ben Affleck had a little cameo.
Yeah.
Here's.
You make a good vampire, if I may say.
Well, thank you.
You make a solid vampire.
Yeah. Little known fact, I made him put a little. I can tell you two really good stories. Oh, you know what? Only one of them's my story, and the other's Paul Rubens' story,
okay.
So I'll let him say that. But I had him make one of my sort of canine teeth gold, so that when I turned into a vampire, I have one gold vampire fang. Way ahead of this
Baller.
Whole him.
Nice touch.
Like grill.
That's a nice touch.
Like,
see, there too.
Coming from you
could have patented. You could have patented it.
Yeah.
Like you were the first vampire gangster.
That's right.
Oh
but listen, but we talk to directors who talk about some actors just come and do what they're supposed to do, and that's fine, and they're very capable, they get the job done, and other actors come bursting with ideas, and directors for the most part seem to like that. They really appreciate an actor who brings something more than is on the printed page of the script. And yeah. It sounds like that's what you try to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little tricky. You don't want to, I don't know. When I was younger, I was more combative in a weird way. Not in a, you know, I'm just more understanding of the process now. Once you direct something and you write something and you work with writers for a long time, you have to be sensitive about it. I'd made a lot of mistakes, like with writers in the past, and I hurt their feelings or got into conflict without meaning to. But yeah, whenever I try to approach it from a point of view of the story, where's my role within the story? Where's what's sort of the drive of my character? What's the sort of, you know, the subliminal stuff that might not even be on paper that I can even just think about? I don't necessarily even have to say any of this. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that to a director, writer sometimes. Like, I don't have to say this, but this is what I'm feeling like I want to say or something like that. Or then sometimes you find little just fun little moments or jokes or, you know, you spill a coffee in a take and instead of like, oh, no, we got to cut, you go, ah, and you know, woo, that's hot. And if it works with what's going on because you're with a girl and now this is embarrassing, but you're trying to be cool and cover and the director likes what happened, then you can just sort of keep that kind of stuff in. And that kind of stuff's fun.
Well, that's improv, though. I mean, that's a huge part of it. And I think it's a way you can kind of... You speak to different actors and you find out what their backgrounds are. Like, it makes a lot of sense to me that you're an improv person because to me that's how I can see that being something you bring to different roles.
Absolutely. I've always wanted to kind of do stand-up and, you know, I've been terrible at it at times, just trying a few things out. I'm just not good and I'm not like a joke writer, but I can tell stories and I like to relate with people and be fun that way. So I don't know, that's always sort of maybe a show at some point or some kind of. Well, I love clown. I would just do a clown thing.
See, and that's another way I got to know you is you know all my clown friends.
I do.
Yes, see, you know all of my clown
I'm
and puppet friends.
Clowns.
It's a small
yeah,
world.
See, I
it's
know.
A small world.
That's awesome. I love all those guys. Those are like my favorite people.
It's exciting.
It is exciting. And then it's fun and it's creative. And they're all typically like, you know, when you find something you love and you just sort of put your love into it. It's like, I love ribs. Like, I grew up just love beef ribs. I just love them. So then when I grew up, I was like, well, why don't I learn how to make the best ribs that I like? You know what I mean? So it came from love, and it's like I've perfected this, you know, steaming, smoking, and grilling.
Where are these ribs?
I'm getting hungry right now.
These ribs happen at some point. And then I found the sauces that I like mixing together. So then I've come up with my own version of these, like, crazy candied ribs. And that's the love that you have. So if you could also bring that to whatever you do sort of for your business, hopefully it's creative if that's what you're into.
Wrestling ribs.
Yeah.
Now, tell us how your directorial debut came about, Tripper.
Oh, man, the Tripper was a long time in coming. I was at a outdoor music festival called Reggae on the River in Northern California. It's a really exceptional place and just very, it's in Humboldt County and it's really wild and just a really cool festival. We used to go there as teenagers, like, you know, 17, 18, 19. I was sitting there one time. We were all like buzzed out by the river and all these hippies around. And it was getting nighttime and it was kind of getting ominous. And I said, well, wouldn't it be crazy if like some madman came and started hacking all these hippies out here? So then that led to like me just thinking back on different stuff. And we've always been kind of lefty in our politics. And I remember like when Ronald Reagan was the president and he cut funding for mental institutions, and then, like, the homeless became way more visible. Like, they were all over the place. Like, it used to kind of be like you'd have drifters and hobos, in a sense, like winos. But now we had, like, homeless people who were, like, you know, you could see there was a mental challenge that was different. The sort of what the people that had to be living on the streets and... So that also had an effect on the story. And then I started working with a great guy named Joe Harris. And we kind of whittled it down to this story about a a guy who's obsessed with Ronald Reagan who hacks up hippies in an outdoor music festival.
Funny, they never invited you back to that outdoor music festival. Like, not that guy.
No.
But, so how did the film fulfill your wishes? Did it turn out the way you hoped it would?
No, it didn't. But it was an extremely expensive film school course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I did what my goal was, which was to produce a slasher, B-movie, political satire horror film. You know what I mean? So it was good. I mean, you know, I look back at it, there's changes I'd still make to this day, and how we like put it out by ourselves, and it was just a bit of a disaster. But, you know, I mean, you never say never, but... You know, what's going on in politics now would make a great horror film as well. It seems like there's madness going on. So it's sort of, it has, I think it still would play, but it's funny, like, some people don't, you know, the kids today wouldn't know who Ronald Reagan is. They're like, who?
It's that guy whose wife did that thing with the no drugs.
Yeah.
That's the...
Exactly.
That's the one.
It's amazing how some things are fleeting, trends, popularity, certain people's popularity, whatever, and other things endure. And it's so unpredictable now. Things are moving at such a rapid pace, an accelerated pace, it seems to me, especially in our pop culture, that, you know, I don't know how to predict. I don't know what's going to last. Mm-hmm. And... So I'm always happy when I show an old comedy short or an old cartoon to my students at USC, and they respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I say, okay, it's the year 2018, and this film from 1934 just grabbed them.
Yeah.
And, you know, made them laugh. It's like, okay.
They always respond to Charlie Chase.
Yep.
Always.
And to Betty Boop.
Yeah. Oh, Betty Boop. It's never a bad time for Betty Boop.
Yeah.
But there's so many and that's fun. I like watching people, and so sitting in his class, it's less for me about watching the film or the conversation. I like watching the kids and sort of seeing what they get.
I bet.
And
now, what are you showing your young kids? You have
Three Stooges. Me and Charlie started binging on that.
Your wife must be thrilled.
Wrestling. She's also thrilled about that. Yeah, there's a lot of like, you can't do this at school, but right. Here, I'll put my hand up. Try to get my eyes. So there's a lot of that. I mean... Yeah, that's kind of what we've recently been into.
Mm-hmm.
But Godzilla, he's a little too young. He's 4, but it doesn't really scare him. And I don't know. There's something amazing about all that.
Are you talking about the old Japanese Godzilla?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's not scary.
I know.
Well, maybe to a 4-year-old, or maybe not.
The 1-year-old, not scared at all.
No.
The 1-year-old is totally into it.
They have such good entertainment now, like Coco and stuff like that. I mean, it's just like so brilliant that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, we Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. We watched that. Holds up. I mean, from 1930.
How can you not respond to those dwarfs?
Oh man,
and the individual personalities.
Amazing.
Dumbo scares me.
I know Dumbo's intense.
Dumbo always makes me cry.
I'm really excited about the Tim Burton.
Oh, fingers crossed. I hope it's good.
I know.
No.
You're still bitter about Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
No, Charlie's not the one that gets me. No? Sweeney Todd's the one that makes me a little punchy.
Oh, I did Sweeney Todd as a play.
Did you?
Did you?
Yes. Yeah.
What a great play.
Yeah. Well, just in high school, but yes.
But chance to do it, though.
Yeah. No, I didn't get to play him, though. I always had envy.
Did you play the razor strop? What did you play?
No, I played
The Blood.
Jonas Fogg, like a one scene guy, and then ensemble.
Who did you play in The Outsiders?
I played Two-Bit.
Oh, wow.
Emilio Estevez.
You played Emilio.
Role. And then I overdid.
That's why you got hair.
I did overdid his hairstyle. Then it became really comedic. Like, not that I was trying to. And then I looked back and I was like, what was I thinking? And how did they let me do that?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Now, being the youngest, what kind of lessons have you learned from your siblings' experiences?
Yeah,
I guess in many cases they went up against it before you did. Dealing with the slings and arrows of trying to build a career.
I mean, well, both of my sisters, Rosanna and Patricia, just that. I mean, the gender equality role thing mm-hmm. going on, and the Me Too that Rosanna's just been amazingly brave with, and all that stuff. I mean, but then a lot of it, like, beyond that, beyond, like, I don't know, the predatory behavior, but mm-hmm. just also, you know, what to look out for. You know, mm-hmm. that guy's kind of, you know, watch out for him, or, you know, just different lessons, but also acting lessons and running yeah. lines and, like, you know, should I do this? You know, and you know, it always helps, like, them get you in the door when you're starting out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just to even have you, I don't know. But you also have to prove yourself, so.
Sure.
Well, see, that's, I always say for anyone who says, you know, obviously this industry mm-hmm. is full of families. And not everybody yeah. realizes just how many there are.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't imagine when Desperately Seeking Susan happened, what that was like for your family.
It's yeah,
like,
holy, totally.
I can't believe that yeah. this is going on.
Yeah, totally.
And that must have been a huge change for all of you.
Absolutely.
At the same time, then you get, except we were talking about how, what's the age gap between you and Patricia?
Me and Patricia is like 3 years.
So you guys are all relatively close together. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what I find fascinating. Similar to the Baldwins, mm-hmm. you know, there's a couple of different families where you have people close in age. The Cusacks.
Yeah, totally.
Same type of thing. The idea that you could be in a film with your sister, brother, father, cousin, whatever, it's a trip. And even just looking at your siblings and who they've married, who you've at different points been related to. Nicolas Cage.
Yes,
let's just.
Of, you know, families.
But it's,
I know, but like it's funny. The Cusacks and also the Travoltas in Chicago. My parents knew, you know, Ellen Travolta, mm-hmm. John's sister, and the Joan Cusack, I think, somehow was in some acting classes with my family and stuff like that. So it all is very...
It's small
it is.
And incestuous, and that's
it is.
Okay.
Especially when you grow up with it, like some of these kids, like, you know, you're growing up, like, joking around with another, the biggest stars in the world.
It's definitely a trip.
It
but
is
that's,
a trip.
But same, like, I can't imagine when Scream happened, because I don't... I'm 32, and I can't imagine anybody in my age range who hasn't seen... At least two of the four.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm at all four.
Thank
you. They're on TV all the time, and I watch them all the time. But I can't imagine that. Like, that's a huge, you know,
that was a big
people calling you Dewey and doing that kind of.
They still call me Dewey,
which is so crazy. God.
Or Doofy.
Doofy. I was going to.
They always kind of do it, or it's a Freudian slip. They kind of, I don't know. Now, I respond to both.
Yeah, right?
Now, Kevin Williamson, you know, went from a standing start to, you know.
Yeah. Full throttle.
Tremendous success. Yeah. How did he achieve the tone of Scream? Because that's a big part of the success of that whole series was that it was kind of meta, sort of.
Yeah,
that and all of us learning how to pronounce Nev.
Yeah.
Those are the two things we got. Yeah. Neve Campbell?
He was just great. I mean, that's why that first one was so great, because he'd really just wrote the script and it didn't change that much and really, you know, spent the time and they allowed him the freedom to do it right.
Mm-hmm. And you knew what he wanted from you.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, my character was written a little differently. It was like a big jock, a kind of dumb meathead. And I was like, I can do meathead, but I'm even doing it in a sweeter, like, I just always thought, I mean, I like sort of playing with, you know, just archetypes in a way. So you have a cop archetype, like who's this, you know, protected servant aspect of authority. But then if you then slant him with, he's got insecurities and, you know, he's
his
a really good guy,
him.
But nobody really believes in him.
Yes.
And all of this stuff sitting on him, then you can draw from all those places and your reactions to stuff. And, you know, you just have fun with it, really.
And then it happened again.
And then it happened again. I know.
And then it happened again.
No.
And then you get engaged in the movie and you got married in real life.
I know. It was really a bit of meta life behavior there.
Yes.
I mean, it really became like a film within a life, within a baby, within a home, within, like, you know, getting married, mother's parents dying, and, you know, and then that's the final one, got a divorce. So that's what happens. I mean, but we're all still friends and really get along, and that's kind of life.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah,
totally.
It is.
Yeah.
Now, switching gears again, you gotten to work with the Muppets.
I got to work with the Muppets.
A guy but cares I also, about puppets.
I will. I mean, I do love puppets, but I also got to work with Marlon Brando. So we can go there.
Let's go right there.
Let's go right
okay.
there.
Okay.
I mean,
smash Muppets, cut to but, Marlon Brando.
I know. It was one of his last film called Free Money, and it was this just amazing opportunity. Yves Simenon, I think was his name, the director, just called me up. I'd worked with him before. He's like, David, do you want to do one day if you work opposite Marlon Brando? I was like, oh, my God, yes, yes. So I got to go up there. And it was snowing in Minnesota or something. And so I show up on set, and Marlon Brando's there with his girlfriend or wife at the time, and she's a sweet Asian lady, and he's sitting there, and he's big at this point.
Yeah.
And even funny was nice, and he's got this very strange haircut where the top of his head is completely shaved, and it's like he's got kind of bozo sort of hairline.
Yes.
But you could tell it was shaved. You know what I mean? It was looking kind of strange. But I was like, oh, I was just in awe of meeting him. And it was really cold. And we had they called us to the set too early, and they weren't ready. And there was snowing everywhere. There was this little store or something. But he's like, hey, kid, do you want to sit in my car? I'll turn on the heat. We can stay out of the cold. And I was like, yes, sir. Thank you so much. So he sat me right behind him, and I'm just looking at the back of his sort of shaved, bald head, and I'm kind of talking to his wife or girlfriend, and she's very nice, and he's very nice, and he keeps asking me these questions. I'm like, where are you from, kid? And I was like, oh, I grew up in Los Angeles. You know, my family is, how long have you been acting? Stop this and that, and just making small talk, and I'm so nervous. I'm like, just like, I can hardly breathe, and I don't know what to say, and I'm just, I don't know, I've seen all these scenes in my head of him, Apocalypse Now, and we're, you know, the Wild Ones, and...
Yeah, what do you got?
And then City or Streetcar Named Desire, like, just like, and then he's just kind of asking me these questions. Then we go and we kind of rehearse for a second, and he's like, come on back into the car. So I sit back in the car, and he's sitting in front, and we'd been outside. It was cold, and I'm sniffling. And he goes, do you have a cold? And I was like, no, it's just cold outside. And I was like, oh, I hope I don't have a cold. I don't think I have a cold. But then I was so nervous that I was going to give him a cold and that he's working on this film. So I was like holding my breath. And as soon as they like called us back to the set, I didn't go back in the car. I couldn't stand it. But the great thing was doing the scene with him. So we go to do our scene, and I have to give him the keys to this pickup truck that he's retiring with. And they didn't really work any of the stuff out. So he's like, okay. It's funny because all his humor went back to like the Three Stooges or Laurel and Hardy and stuff like this. So he goes, what if the kid gives me the keys? He shakes my hand, but he doesn't let go. He just keeps on shaking. And I was like, I love it. And he was like, I saw the kid. And then I start getting annoyed by it. I was like, that's amazing. Anything. I'll do anything. And then he goes, and then maybe when I have to go get into the truck, since it's so high and hard for me to get up, and he gets on his hands and knees, and I'll step on his back and get in the truck.
God.
And I was like, I love it. And Eve was like, no, you can't do that. And he was, you know, a good 350 pounds or something. No, 325, maybe, four, maybe more. But I've been practicing that move. I'm the youngest. I've been practicing. I've had two or three people climb on my back at once. So I was like, I think I can do it. But they didn't. But to this day, I regret not doing that because it would have made the scene way better. And I have to get like in the mud, like kind of the snow, and he steps up on me and just, you know, having a Marlon Brando step on your back. You can't really.
If you're going to break your back, that's a solid reason to break your back.
But even that, we should have done a pratfall, like, oof, okay, and then just help him up into it. But it was a great experience, and I was really sad that there wasn't more pageantry and celebration around his death. It really was kind of, they didn't really do him the honor that he
It was unfortunate because in the later years, besides being a recluse,
Yeah.
He became, you know, his behavior became, that we knew of,
right,
became strange. Maybe not with his friends or his family, but
That's probably why he's a recluse.
Yeah.
I mean, my behavior's strange, but maybe I should need to recluse a little.
But so I think that unfortunately overshadowed
you know,
the greatness of the man.
I know, and there was the terrible like incident with his son. And
yeah,
all
that stuff. It's terrible.
So it just was.
Did you see the documentary based on the audio tapes?
No,
it's tough, but it's interesting.
It is really worth seeing.
Oh, yeah. Good.
It's what's it called, Listening to Marlon.
Something like that. But it's
really
long.
Interesting. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He recorded himself.
Oh my God!
His phone calls.
Because of course he did. Of course he recorded his own phone calls. Why not?
Oh, I hope there's more stuff, like cool stuff about him.
All right, so now I feel silly saying, but about the Muppets?
Yeah, yes. Right.
No, the Muppets.
Did they step on
I
you?
Love. No, I was able to help give Kermit his star on Hollywood Boulevard, which was a great honor.
Wow!
I wore a green suit. It was quite a day, a celebration. All those guys are amazing. All the Henson family. And
sure.
Jim Henson was a true hero.
Have you been to Puppet Up?
The no.
Brian, tell him where
Brian's,
you were.
No, Brian's new thing?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. I haven't, but I can't wait.
Yeah, I got to go the other night.
Oh, is it fun?
It is.
Oh, how
it
great.
Is. And Brian performed in one
cool.
skit, and he's,
oh, nice.
He's terrific. I mean, that
yeah, right.
Be a
not
shock.
A surprise,
I mean,
but yeah.
Is it their running thing? Like,
yeah, it's there. If you watch just the middle of the stage, you see these improv performers, which is what most of them are, actors and improv performers, and they're manipulating the puppets with the the steel rods and all that kind of stuff. But if you look on either side of the stage, there are giant TV screens that are showing you only what you would see if you were watching this as a television show.
Right.
There's no sign of the puppeteers, the manipulators, or the actors.
Huh.
And then they do some clever stuff that I don't want to spill the beans about.
That's great. I love that.
They do clever stuff with video as well.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, getting to know all those guys was really, really great. I mean, Frank Oz and just all of them.
Oh, well.
Frank Oz is so cool.
They're all the coolest people.
Yeah, they are. And again, that youthful energy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That they give off, and because they're never talking down to a children's audience.
Oh no!
Even on Sesame Street, I mean, they're entertaining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes there's a specific purpose to it on Sesame Street.
Mm-hmm.
They want to teach a particular lesson, but whether they're doing that or not, they're just inspired.
Yeah,
they're inspired.
No,
so have you done puppetry?
Life. Yeah. I have a nightclub called Bootsy Bellows, and we have puppets there that dance around with the people a lot. And we've done some puppet stuff with the Bob Baker marionette people downtown.
Yeah. I've seen some of it. It's been fantastic. Bootsy Bellows, by the way, is it still home?
It's there, but we're just shutting it down right now for a remodel, and it'll be open in about 4 months.
It's a hugely popular place.
Oh, good.
It is.
Good job,
we're opening one. Thank you. In Dallas as well.
Did you always want to open a place like that?
Kind of like, I always loved, you know, it kind of goes back to vaudeville.
Yeah.
It goes back to Sunset Strip and like that whole sort of performance and nightlife and, you know, those old days. It's not like those old days, but we try to maintain a little flavor of that.
And you were starting to say you're opening it up. You're opening
the one
it up?
In Dallas, yeah.
Wow.
That's been
cool.
That's
neat.
And
we have one in Aspen there.
Now, you are in one of the movies I consider a major sleeper of recent years.
Yeah.
And these are the films that sometimes slip through the cracks and sometimes need a little boost for people to hear about them. And that's Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, Bone Tomahawk was a wonderful movie.
What an exceptional piece of work.
Yeah, it was. It was wonderful.
Is it Zoller or Zahler?
It's Craig Zoller.
Yeah, that's Craig Zoller.
Very good at
that.
That's
okay.
That was another one. He just kind of called me out of the blue, and I was like, yeah, I'd love to. It's so fun to work with Sid and all that. And I don't know. That was just a fun couple-day shoot, and then it ended up being this amazing film. I knew it was going to be amazing, just his whole take on it. He was like explaining it to me before I'd even read the script. I was like, yeah, I'm in. Like,
and location-wise.
And working with Kurt Russell again was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's neat.
I love that.
He's
tremendous.
He just keeps hitting them out of the park. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he's just solid. Solid human being, solid actor, solid winemaker, solid person in general, and just a real salt-of-the-earth kind of guy, but also tremendous skilled actor and
yeah.
always fun in the real moments. And
mm-hmm.
Very kind, generous.
Do you have heroes or role models?
It's a guy like Kurt Russell. I mean, certain people mm-hmm. that I've worked with, Paul Rubens is definitely a hero mm-hmm. and role model of mine. I mean, and just inspiration for collecting and for old film and just history of stuff, really comedy and magic and all that stuff he's been influenced me on. Who else? Quincy Jones has been a big influence of mine. Just really love his character and his spirit and his generosity, his wisdom and genius. I mean, the guy is just... You know, he'll tell a story. Like, you know, when I was, you know, just, I don't know, he'll
Sinatra.
Throw these things out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Sinatra's ring. He's wearing Sinatra's called Sinatra ring. I was like, okay, well, you win the game of life.
Right.
You're the coolest person I've ever met ever.
Ew.
And Sue Mengers was amazing, like a mm-hmm. Person that inspired me when she was alive. Just the first... like hardcore female agent in Hollywood just took the world by storm in the 60s and 70s and was part of William Morris and just like changed the game. Never also got the sort of respect, but hopefully there'll be something really cool at some point.
Did you see the show that Bette Midler did?
I didn't see it, no. Was it good?
It was, well, I didn't know Sue Mengers. I only read know, articles about her and the legend and the lore and all of that.
Parties were...
yeah.
Epic. Like, I mean, they were just so funny, and she was just so crass, and oh.
She made an impression.
Yeah, she sure
did. That's for sure.
She made such an impression on me that I'm an artist, too, so I went home as soon as I met her, and I was, like, inspired. And I did this with Quincy Jones, too. Sometimes people just inspire me, and I want to, like, make a piece of art for them. But with Sue, it was funny, because we had this little funny flirtation. She's much older than me, and, mm-hmm. But there was like a chemistry, I've got to say. Mm-hmm. But she was always flirting with me, like, don't get jealous, Courtney, and all this stuff. And all this stuff. So I went home and I did this like funny painting, but with like tattoo style framework with roses and like birds and weed leaves, because she was big into that. And then it was Sue, and it was an old, like, sort of taken from an old picture of her and a painting in the middle. And I made posters of it. And then I found the route for the Oscars. And she had been sort of, she's not really been blacklisted from Hollywood, but she kind of, like, dipped out and, like, never really, she'd have her parties and she maintained her friends, but she wasn't really in the spotlight or would go to the parties or anything. So all along the Oscar limo route, I posted all these posters. And then, like, one of her friends said, Sue, I am looking at a poster of you on the way to the Oscar. She got such a kick out of it. And then a few weeks later or something, she calls me up and she says, David, what do you know about these posters? I said, well, Sue, as you know, I'm your creepy stalker and fascinated by you. So I did that for her. That was fun.
I hope you did it in the dead of night. Like, I hope
I actually hired my friends too to do most of them. I just kind of like hammered a few up. But I was like, I can't get busted. I mean, I'm used to being a graffiti artist and all this stuff, and I love street art, but I can't, like, I have children. I can't be right. Like, oh.
It does change with kids, doesn't it?
It does.
It really
absolutely.
Does. I have always loved the Three Stooges. And one Saturday morning, when Jesse was very, 3, 4 at the most, something like that. It was a long time ago when they still, local TV still ran a lot of this stuff. It wasn't all cable.
Right.
And so I was channel flipping and I hit the Stooges. Okay, let's watch this for a while. And Jesse had never seen them, so she's interested to look and see what's going on. And then I think Mo took a giant shears to Larry's nose.
Yeah.
I said, oh, okay, let's change the channel.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like instant hypocrisy.
I know.
You know,
I know.
I can't expose my kid to that.
I know.
Oh, but the other stuff I saw, let's just.
Well, what can I say? Not everything, you know. They're not all Buster Keaton.
Oh, I mean,
Bridge Over the River Kwai is not that violent.
There's a few that I definitely have flashbacks from old movies we watched together that I don't think they realized how scary they were.
Yeah, totally.
The Man Who Laughs at 8 is not ideal. Yeah. Let's just agree. I still see him in my mind when I close my eyes.
Scary.
It is terrifying.
I bet.
Well, okay.
I'm just saying. One mistake. One mistake.
Thank you.
Giant theater.
You're very generous. Thank you, darling. David, it's been such fun talking to you.
Hey, it's so fun talking to you, too. Thank you.
To meet you.
Talk about what you're doing next, please.
Well, we just produced a documentary called Survivor's Guide to Prison that was just on. So that was really interesting. And that's sort of another direction we're going in, just producing stuff. We have a few more we're producing right now. And then I just did The Miseducation of Bindu, which was a really fun, beautiful script and story and wonderful actors. And it was produced by the Duplass brothers. And it was just sort of, it's a beautiful film. We shot it in Indiana. That should be out soon. And then there's something called Mr. Bird's Advice for Sad Poets that I play a funny role in. Just little stuff. I mean, still just doing my thing. And then this wrestling, I'm doing a wrestling return to the ring after 18 years, and we're sort of documenting it. And that's been really fun.
It's a dual project. You're doing it, and you're also documenting.
Yeah, I mean, yes. It's part of a journey that I've had through this, like, crazy, you know, it started with a movie called Ready to Rumble, and then through that, I mean, I'd already been a fan of wrestling, and then I got to be on the shows, which was a dream come true, and then I won a championship, which was, I never even imagined could happen to me. But then people hated me for 18 years because of it. Mm-hmm. So then after that...
Why, they thought you were an interloper?
Didn't do the time. I was an outsider. I didn't deserve it. It takes away all the credibility of what, you know, it stands for. You know, if you're the heavyweight champion of the world, you're supposed to be able to beat anybody in the back room and the whole thing. And if you can't really, then it doesn't really... can't really buy it, but it's been a long time, but I love wrestling, so it's just sort of to go back and understand why people hated me so much and then learn really about wrestling. And it's been so difficult, and it's such an insanely complex and beautiful sport. It's just been kind of part of like wanting to sort of let other people know what wrestling's about and sort of bring some of the it's always been like not completely respected. It's always been on the fringe of like, oh, mm-hmm. but that's wrestling. Mm. And now people are like, is it fake or is it not? And it's very not fake. I mean, this is one of the most painful, like crazy risk-taking stuff you can do. But it's been a lot of fun getting to know all the people and getting to know the fans. And, you know, I love the fans.
Who do you want to fight?
Who do I want to fight?
These are the important questions.
Oh, man. I don't really have like a, I fought a guy named RJ City recently, and that was my big rival at the moment. But eventually, I don't know. I mean, Hulk Hogan.
That would be magic. Oh, there's only
I don't
one.
Know.
There's
I
only
would
one.
Like wow. for just to for him to see his leg dropping on me would be like okay, full circle. I could die now.
Or you could go way back in time and invite Tor Johnson.
Yes.
That's
one of my all-time
amazing.
Favorites.
Yeah.
I think that's the only one you
George
can name.
George the Animal Steel. Oh, I'd take it.
I want to see you with like Brock Lesnar.
Oh, my
Someone
gosh.
Someone just ridiculous.
Yeah, Brock, just throw me around the ring.
And I want to see the outfit. This
I could,
is also
I should
important.
Do Brock Lesnar's thing and just, he fought Cena one time and I think he like threw him over in this suplex like 18 times or something.
Suplex.
I'd be like, okay, 19.
Right.
Just something to like, finally, okay, let's give him some respect.
My husband's about the tables.
Oh, yeah.
That's the
I love
that's,
a good table.
Oh, that's as soon as he sees one, just glowing like a child.
A
he's like, no, put him through the table.
I got the Randy Orton put me through a table once.
Oh, gosh. WWE.
This is what we live for.
I know.
This
that
is what we live for.
Too.
Well,
Thank you. In
art as in life, you are fearless.
Thank you so much.
And you too. And that comes through absolutely loud and clear.
Okay.
Are you a social media creature?
Yes. How do I do it? What do I do?
You're at.
Oh. I'm at David Arquette.
Yes, you
hey,
are.
We can do
on
that.
The Twitter.
Yes.
And on the Instagrams. Okay.
And then Facebook. I forgot my password. I can't figure it out. But it's there.
If people want to use a little,
they'll find you.
Elbow grease.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll probably find you.
Are you going to be doing any more shows at Bob's Theater?
But yeah, I'd love to. I love those guys. Absolutely.
Such a cool space. If you guys have not heard of it, have not been there, it's got quite the history.
Oh, yeah. Look up Bob Baker. Puppeteer, and puppet master, and puppet guru, online somewhere, and you'll read a lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's thank so you cool. both,
David. Thank you, pleasure.
Thank you.
We're very, very formal at the
formal handshake.
We just shook hands like adults.
Rather than throwing me over your shoulder, you just fist bump. There
See,
we go.
Jeff, tell him to explode. He doesn't know to explode unless you tell him he has to explode.
It's not
fist bumps. This is exactly. You should end every podcast with visuals.
That's right. Visual
That's the way.
Okay.
Of course.
Trust us, folks. It happened.
Yes.
You just have to go on faith.
He just threw David through a table. It was great. Yes.
And where do people find us, honey?
You are at Leonard Maltin, and I am at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram. And you can always go to leonardmaltin.com and learn about movies that have just come out and books and DVDs. And we've just done a whole bunch of interesting pieces on some newer Blu-rays that came out from Kino Lorber and Flickr Alley. Lots of good stuff.
Wonderful. Yeah. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.